Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Yes, indeed, to the best of my ability and the best of my knowledge, here at a minute past the hour, on this, the 24th day of August, 2015, the hum is gone. At least the biggest part of the hum is gone. There's a little bit of a hum left over, but that part has been here since the very beginnings of the horn itself. Sounds a little like Morse code or something, but that part, not much I can do about. Good. In the chat room, Jug of Punch noting, where's the hum? It's gone where the candle flame goes when it blows out, and we may never know that answer. Jug? No, I worked on it for the better part of the weekend, and in point of fact, I managed to make it go away with $100 worth of brand new cables. And we worked toward the completion of the equipment fund, which now is down there near to $500 or $1,000, depending on whether it's $4,500 or $5,000, the fund itself. It's something that had to be addressed before we brought all the new equipment in, because you can't be sending a hum out all over the country to the terrestrial radios, and that could probably offend the FCC more than saying booger. Yeah. Now you quit that, Carol. She says hum. Now it ain't there. No. Should be entirely, utterly, totally gone, except for the little artifactual fellow. It is, in fact, Monday, the 24th of August, 2015. It is 3 minutes past the hour. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room. Good evening, Jug of Punch, and good evening, chat room moderator Sparky. Longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky. More coming along in short order, I imagine. Yes, we are officially in session. Okay, good. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, that's where the Contribute tab is, and that's where you go if you want to help us keep this whole shebang on the air. We try to raise $200 an evening, and that is what the fundraising goal is for this evening. We have our buddy Scott in Sweden and Andy to thank for that. They took care of the last part of the deficit from the previous week. So we begin afresh. No funny little senses at the end of the dot. No, just $200 to raise this evening. Thank you very, very kindly. And so that means 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 1 at 200. Challenge is welcome, however you want to do that. But we need to raise $200 this evening. Because, well, they didn't give me those new cables. No. But we do have new cabling in. And as soon as John Fox and I can get together, I'm going to explore a couple of possibilities that might make that last little artifactual hum disappear. probably need to, among other things, upgrade Windows 10 32-bit to 64-bit, which will mean an addition of RAM, you know, that kind of thing. So, busy, 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 busy. It is, in fact, the 24th day of August, which I have found out over the course of the day is a really crummy date in history. Working forward, this is the anniversary of that day in the year 79 of the Common Era. Which, let's say 2015, 79... ...1,936 years ago, after weeks, if not months, and probably years, of periodic rumblings and smoke puffings, on this day, 1,936 years ago, because I carried the 19, Vesuvius erupted. Not too awfully far from the Bay of Naples, you know, you can see Mount Vesuvius. You can see Mount Vesuvius from the Bay of Naples. There were two resort cities there. One was Pompeii, the other was Herculaneum. And, of course, there was Neapolis, the new city. It becomes Naples later on, and is to this day. Everything was pretty much wiped out. Pliny the Elder, 55 or 56 years old, a naturalist and a historian and a philosopher who had actually survived the reign of terror of Nero, got word from a dear friend that Pomponianus, that the said Pomponianus was trapped. And among other things, Pliny the Elder had a history of having been a naval officer. So he requisitioned a vessel and went sailing into the Bay of Naples, or just down from the Bay of Naples, to a place called Stabiae, where his friend was marooned on the beach. They had managed to survive the pumice fall. Pliny and his slaves, whom he provided with pillows to tie atop their heads with linen strips, as did everybody else, to provide against the falling pumice, which would knock one senseless. They went about the rescue, and everybody made it out but Pliny the Elder. Pliny the Elder had what we know now was, or has been historically said to be, asthma. The ancient sources said he was overcome by the toxic fumes. That would include his nephew, Pliny the Younger. But Pliny the Younger also notes that he had asthma. He was overcome by his asthma because nobody else died of the toxic fumes. Which means, of course, that, well, Pliny the Elder shares a demise with thousands of American citizens every year who die of complications exacerbated by the presence of particulate matter in the air that they breathe that is created by what, of course? Absolutely, coal. Yes. And, of course, the people who breathe particulate matter at the foot of mountaintop removal operations and become diseased by coal. Exactly. But that's just one thing that happened. The eruption of Vesuvius was the 24th of August, 79 of the Common Era. Flash forward 1,000 years or so. No, more than 1,000 years, more like 1,400 years. And you find the one, the only, Catherine de' Medici, planning a wedding. Yes. She was a piece of work, Catherine de' Medici. She was the mother Well, let's let Eugene Finnerman, the world's brightest, sharpest, satir, and most historically incisive satirist, tell us. Catherine de' Medici was having a bad week. First, she had to organize the wedding of her daughter Margot to Henri de Bourbon, King of Navarre. Even with her connections, the Queen Mother couldn't get a better date for Notre Dame Cathedral than August. Who'd want to be in Paris then? Be sure to triple the order on the church incense. Then there was a matter of finding a cleric willing to do mixed marriages. Royal marriages required at least an archbishop, but none seemed to approve of a Protestant bridegroom. Fortunately, someone in the groom's family was still Catholic, and he was a cardinal. Of course, there was always a challenge of seating. The Guises hated the Montmorencies, and neither wanted to be near Huguenot. Finally, at the last minute, she had to plan the massacre of the Protestant guests. Yes, that. On this date, in 1572, just a little bit short, 9 minus 2, carry the 19, 1,493 years after the eruption of Vesuvius, Catherine de' Medici orchestrated the slaughter of her Huguenot wedding guests. Yes. But the thing is, it took off. It was a popular thing. The people of Paris were decidedly pro-Catholic and anti-Huguenot. And, well, why the ordinary hoi polloi didn't want to be left out of the fun. So the massacre spilled over from Notre Dame, or actually it was the Louvre. That's where the guests were staying. They're dragged out into the courtyard and executed in the name of Christ. But it spilled over, and the hoi polloi didn't want to be left unblooded, I suppose. So the Catholic population of Paris went wild, and it spread to the larger countryside. And by the time all was said and done, according to the Encyclopedia Britannica, there were about 50,000 Huguenots dead at the hands of the Roman Catholics. Now, the Catholic Encyclopedia, as Eugene Finnerman notes, being Catholic, it's a little more conservative. It says, yeah, maybe there were 1,100 dead in Paris, and, oh, perhaps 15,000 in all of France. Yeah. And, of course, the Catholic Encyclopedia mentions nothing about the fact that it was done in the name of their Savior, their pious Roman Catholic Savior. Because heresy. So you got that. So now, from 1572 to... oh dear, more math. 1572... 1572. So 403 years later, carry the 67. 403 years later, another August the 24th rolled around. In case you didn't know, August can be a hot, sticky, sultry time. Especially down south, places like Mississippi Stan. Place like, say, Money, Mississippi. It was outside a general store in Money, Mississippi, that a boy, 14 years old, at 14, you're still a boy. Young man is a bit premature at that point. 14-year-old boy was visiting relatives down there. And he'd been, even though he was visiting from the north, he'd been picking cotton with some other fellas, boys, and as they picked the cotton and dropped the bowls into the cloth bags, he bragged to them at 14 years old, because 14-year-olds brag a lot about things they don't know about, and one of the things that 14-year-olds tend not to know the most about is, you know, sex. Well, he bragged to his buddies that he had a white girlfriend back in Chicago. I did mention that these boys, and they were boys, were black. And so as they passed the general store there at Money, Mississippi, his 12-year-old cousin went inside, but the boy stayed outside where there was a woman who was at the time 21 years old, 7 years senior to the young fella. And he flirted with her. Good-looking young boy. He whistled at her. Maybe he winked. Carolyn Bryant was 21 and white. And by the end of the day, or the beginning of the next, young Emmett Till would be dead. Carolyn Bryant lied and said that he made lewd comments and whistled at her as he left the store. Simeon Wright is 72 years old. He said, I don't know what he said, but when I was in there, he said nothing to her. He didn't have time. She was behind the counter, so he didn't put his arms around her or anything like that. While I was in there, he said nothing, but after we left the store, we both walked out together. She came outside going to her car. As she was going to her car, he did whistle at her. That's what scared her so bad. The thing I saw him do was that he did whistle. And as soon as Mama heard what had happened, she became scared to death. It wasn't the next day, but it was a couple of days later. Or it was early on August the 28th, 1955, after the incident on this, the 24th, that J.W. Milam went to the home of Emmett Till's great-uncle and kidnapped him. J.W. Milam had a gun. They forced Emmett Till to get dressed. They marched him out of the house and into a truck waiting outside. Outside, an inquiry was passed to the inside of the truck in the cab. Was this the right boy? And a lady's voice responded that it was. That was no lady. That was Carolyn Bryant. They went on, they pistol-whipped Emmett Till in a tool shed. Then they made him carry a 75-pound cotton gin fan to the back of the Tallahatchie River. And there they made him strip. Then they kept on beating him. I think the word for what they did to him was torture. Remember how George Bush would stand there behind his presidential podium back during the Reign of Error and say, this is the United States of America. We don't torture. Yeah, we torture. We got a long history of torture. Torture is one of the things that we do best. And so they tortured Emmett Till. They gouged out one of his eyes. They beat him past recognition. They shot him in the head. And then they wrapped his body in with the cotton gin fan with barbed wire and threw him into the Tallahatchie River. It took 3 days to find his body. And the only way his great uncle could identify his body was by noticing that he had an initialed ring on one finger. His mama ordered an open casket funeral in Chicago. She said, I want them to see what they done to my boy. And it was the flashpoint of the civil rights movement. Meanwhile, Pastor, Brother, Governor, Reverend Mike, presidential candidate, Mike Huckabee, diabetes, snake oil cure salesman, says that the Black Lives Matter movement would be an offense to Martin Luther King Jr. Because, of course, well, Pastor, Brother, Governor, diabetes, snake oil cure salesman, presidential candidate Mike Huckabee is the official white guy spokesman for what Dr. King would think. Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, he knows. Right? He knows. Over on MSNBC over the weekend, that story came to light. In a horrific way. Well, I mean, it would be horrific if you had any shame. And, of course, Pastor, Brother, Governor, Reverend, diabetes, snake oil cure salesman, presidential candidate Mike Huckabee has no shame. Right? I mean, anybody? Janet Mock was subbing, filling in, guest hosting for Melissa Harris Perry this weekend. And in the ongoing letter segment, which is a part of that program, she addressed Pastor, Brother, Governor, diabetes, snake oil salesman, Pastor, Brother, Governor Mike Huckabee. Yeah. And she did a pretty fine job of it. Pity they didn't remember about Emmett Till. Yeah.
Another week, another candidate who has confused a statement that doesn't need saying because it is self-evident with a statement that must be said because of all evidence to the contrary. Only this time the candidate is reaching back in time to support his misguided response by misrepresenting the message of one of American history's greatest leaders. So this week, my letter is to the latest presidential candidate to appear confused over the Black Lives Matter movement. Dear Governor Mike Huckabee, hey, it's Janet. This week, CNN's Wolf Blitzer asked if you agreed with what Hillary Clinton said to Black Lives Matter activists during this meeting.
There's not much that we can do to stop the violence against us.
Well, if that is
a conversation that I've pushed back.
I don't believe you change hearts. I believe you change laws, you change allocation of resources, you change the way systems operate. You're not.
Wow. By the way, that's the audio that I was talking with the Angry Indian about a couple of weeks ago from the Black Lives Matter meeting in New Hampshire with Hillary. I'm not Hillary bashing, but I got to say, that's some pretty restaurant quality white-splaining going on there. How about that? You don't change hearts, you change systems. What a delightful technocratic bit of babble speak. Oh, but never, and this is the, remember, there was no video from real live honest-to-goodness journalists, because the only person there videoing it was the person from Black Lives Matter, so they would have complete, okay, yeah, this is that. I want to hear this again about, how you change systems.
With what Hillary Clinton said to Black Lives Matter activists during this meeting.
There's not much that we can do to stop the violence against us.
Well, if that is
a conversation that I push back.
I don't believe you change hearts. I believe you change laws, you change allocation of resources, you change the way systems operate.
And by the way, that is an edit. And it's a pretty blunt edit. So we don't, because no one else was there videoing, we don't really know what happened there, I don't think. No. But anyway.
Said to Black Lives Matter activists during this meeting.
There's not much that we can do to stop the violence against us.
Well, if that is
a conversation that I push back.
I don't believe you change hearts. I believe you change laws, you change allocation of resources, you change the way systems operate. You're not going to change every heart. You're not.
Governor, the message from BLM is that black people don't have the power to stop the violence committed against them by agents of the state. It's why they're appealing to people like you, people vying to represent the state for help. But clearly you weren't paying attention to the activist message, because if you truly understood that the rallying cry, Black Lives Matter, is a call for that recognition, you wouldn't have responded by saying this.
When I hear people, you know, scream Black Lives Matter, I'm thinking, of course they do. But all lives matter. It's not,
oops,
not that any life matters more than another. That's the whole message I think that Dr. King tried to present. And I think he'd be appalled by the notion that we're elevating some lives above others.
Governor, offering all lives matter in response to the assertion that black lives matter diminishes the black lives that have and continue to be lost. And you should know that by now, because it's a lesson some of your Democratic and Republican opponents have been taught, already been taught, again, and again, and again. And you, Governor, you went even further. In addition to dismissing Black Lives Matter, you also misrepresented one of the greatest champions of civil rights to assist in your attempt to silence the very people and ideas that he fought to protect and died to protect. Because, yes, Martin Luther King Jr. was appalled by the notion that we are elevating some lives above others. But you're a little confused about the we he was talking about. When Dr. King said America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds, he was delaying the United States government for its failure to secure for black people basic civil rights that relegated not only their citizenship, but their humanity to second-class citizen status. Dr. King wouldn't have to look very far to find familiarity with today's young activists in their struggle and the words of their critics. After all, it was the same kind of violence they are fighting that King referenced when he wrote, "There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality." King was not responding. He was not responding to his adversaries, but to his allies, people who he called men of genuine goodwill. And their criticism sounded much like what BLM activists hear from white progressives today. You are doing too much. You're going too hard. You're pushing too far. Governor, if you listen closely to what the activists had said in response to their critics, you will hear the urgency, their urgency. We go hard because our people are dying too often. And far from being appalled at that message, Dr. King would have found echoes in it of his own when he said in his letter from Birmingham jail, when you have seen hate-filled policemen curse, kick, brutalize, and even kill your black brothers and sisters with impunity, then you will understand why we find it difficult to wait. When King watched Watts burn with fire and the indignation of black rage, as we have seen in Ferguson and Baltimore in recent months, he saw in it not the wanton violence of looters and rioters, but a response to the systematic violence of institutional racism. King wrote in an editorial after the Watts riots for the Saturday Review, when there is rock-like intransigence or sophisticated manipulation that mocks the empty-handed petitioner, rage replaces reason. Did you get that, Governor? Because as long as you continue with your unsophisticated manipulation of King's message, and as long as you and other candidates continue your rock-like resistance to the message of the movement, that is as long as you can expect to keep hearing those urgent screams of rage that Black Lives Matter. Sincerely, Janet.
Thank you, Janet. And you see, Pastor, Brother, Governor, Reverend, Presidential Candidate, Diabetes, Snake Oil Cure Salesman Mike Huckstebe is, in fact, that's right, our first nominee for this particular 24th day of August 2015, Moran Monday.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
That's right, that's right. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Brothers and sisters, aunties and uncles, mamas and daddies, kitties and cousins, it is Moran Monday on the horn. I got ahead of myself there. I get a different tent, different day. It is Moran Monday on the horn, and I tell you what, you can't tell the Morans without a program. This is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Behind this here thin cybernetic veil of imaginary canvas reside, awaiting for your inspection, your observation, your shock, your horror, and occasionally your chittering guffaws, a collection of Morans remarkable in the universe. It's only in this carnival, on this medway, that you will find Moran Monday on the horn. Indeed, indeed, we have them all. We have birther Morans, deather Morans, tenther Morans, ninther Morans, booger-eating Morans, bircher Morans, bagger Morans, cantaloupe-cleansing Morans, libertarian Morans, republican Morans, one and all, for your wonder and amazement. A simple advisory, people carrying, women, men, anyone carrying purses, small animals, children, wallets, European-style messenger bags, hang on to them as you enter the Moran Monday tent, as the Morans can get grabby. Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, my, mercy, my. Absolutely. And this one, I don't have any audio for it. I don't know that anybody caught it. But it was a moment. I just happened to be watching television coverage over on MSNBC of the wild ride on the stock market today when they interrupted their breathless coverage of the stock market to bring us coverage from Paris of the awarding of the Legion of Honor, the French Legion of Honor, instituted in like 1804 by none other than Napoleon himself, the awarding of the Legion of Honor to the men who took down the terrorist on the train running from Paris via Brussels
to Amsterdam. Yes, I've been on that train. It's run by Thalys, Thalys. It's a very nice train. It rolled out of Gare du Nord when I was there. It was a lovely ride. And as soon as I got off in Brussels, because you all have filthy minds, as soon as I stepped off the train in Brussels, shortly thereafter, I was, robbed. And I can still see that skinny pants-wearing, skipping little Belgian bastard going off into the night, and me looking at the cop in the train station going, "There he goes. That guy stole my bag." And the Belgian looking at me going, No, really, there he goes. You can still catch him. Perhaps you can call in the morning. Right. But it goes on through to Amsterdam. And it was on that train last week that a guy with a gun and a lot of ammunition was getting ready to slaughter the people on that train. And a subject of Her Majesty the Queen of England, as well as a couple of American citizens, one of whom was a member of the Oregon National Guard, said, and they took him down. Interestingly, none of the Americans had any guns. Now, I'm sure, now I refuse to wander around in the cesspit that is the right-wing portion of the internet, but I'm sure that by now it is all awash with the jokes about French surrender monkeys and how it took an American to save the French again, and the American a Brit, that's what they say on the a Brit, not a citizen of the United Kingdom, not British, but Brit, because we're ignorant as hell. Professional broadcaster, Brit. But anyway, so some unarmed, three unarmed Americans and one unarmed citizen of the Sceptred Isle took down the terrorist. And they didn't have any guns. In point of fact, the most damage that the terrorist did was, ironically enough, with a box cutter. So they received the Legion of Honor, and some producer at MSNBC decided to get the daddy of one of the guys, the National Guard guy from Oregon, decided to get him on the phone to comment on how proud he was of his son for being awarded the Legion of Honor from La République Française. Okay. So he tells the story, and I think it was Tamron Hall. Thank you very much, sir, and we offer you our congratulations on your son's award. Well, before I... And this is... and you could tell it was unscripted, it was live. And I hear... Well, before I go, I just want to say something to the PC crowd out there. It's better to die on your feet like a lion than... be slaughtered on your knees like sheep. And look on, I think it was Tamron Hall's face, was pretty precious. And she said something like, "Great, let's check in with Bill at the Weather Center." Because, you know, when all else fails, you throw it to the Weather Center. Because everybody always tunes in for the weather. Everybody loves the weather. The weather's wonderful. But I, meanwhile, was sitting there thinking, wouldn't it have been fun if she'd have said, "You tell them, brother. Melon love, eh? Happy cantaloupe cleaning to you, too. Come and wash the melon." Because the minute that the creeper said, "I just got a message for the PC crowd out there," I was pretty sure he wasn't an Apple fanatic who didn't have a message for the people running Macintoshes or MacBook Pros or MacBook Ultimates or no. No, PC, of course, stands for politically correct, which is what everybody out there who likes to... I just got a message for the PC crowd out there. This is terrorism, whether you want to admit it or not. And it's better to die on your feet like a lion than be slaughtered on your knees like a sheep. You can spot a right-wing booger-eating moron from a mile away, because anytime they think that they're about to say something that would offend people with anything resembling a conscience or morals or ethics, they say, well, I know I'm supposed to be PC, but I'm not. PC. I know it's not PC to call them Haji Ragheads, but it's terrorism, damn it! Mm-hmm. It really. And what is this... when you're dealing with morons and booger-eaters and birchers and libertarians and the melon-washing crowd, you know, melon lave, that's French for wash the cantaloupe. When you're dealing with that type, you know, they're all about, come and take it! I know it's not PC to want to start World War III and World War IV all together, but... As Ron in Raleigh notes, according to his lawyer, the gunman in Arras was armed to the teeth because he was poor and hungry. Probably should have spent the money on food instead of guns and ammo, just saying. Well, that's only one of the defenses, Ron. The other defense is that dude found the gun, he found a big bag of gun and ammo, and got on the train because he was going to rob everybody because he was poor and hungry. Yeah. And even if that was the case, you could probably go and pawn the gun and the ammo or sell it to your nearest ISIL-loving neighbor and go buy food. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to let the PC crowd know. But I couldn't figure it out. For a minute there, I thought that he was going to go off and wax poetic on the noble death of Cecil the freaking Lion in... It's better to die on your feet like a lion than to die on your knees like sheep. You know, because everybody else in there, them Frenches... They wasn't, and there's probably some Germans and some Belgianiacs and Pennsylvania Dutch. They was all on their knees. Mm-hmm. They were, yeah. Except the brave, bold American and that one Brit who decided, let's go. I'm not trying to take anything from anything away from the three young men and the one older subject of Her Majesty the Queen. What they did was heroic. And everybody, what's the definition of courage? Everyone is afraid in a given situation. Courage is not being crippled by one's fear. Something like that. So the three young men and the one older fella
are definitely to be praised. And apparently they whipped the living daylights right out of that fella who had been on the watch list of several different intelligence units, French intel, Spanish intel, Dutch intel, German intel. The Belgians were probably busy being perplexed, still trying to find my backpack. Steve, I don't know. Steve in New York asks, what the hell does that even mean? Because actually, isn't the old slogan, it's better to die on your feet than live on your knees? And isn't that sort of parallel or synonymous with better dead than red? Marty pointing out, you know, the true definition of a hero is someone who gets other people killed. Those three were lucky. And you know what? The young soldier said so himself. He said it was obvious that the man had never had any weapons training at all. And if he had, he said, not just we, but everyone else would have been in real trouble. Better live on your feet like a lion than die on your knees like sheep. I had already begun composing the Moran Monday list by that time, but I realized in that moment that we were going to have a little discussion of Kostankos. That was the lad. And I wonder if his son's looking at him going, oh, Jesus, Dad, really, did you say that? God damn it. Damn it! Well, that's what I told my boy all those years as he was growing up. He'd say, Dad, pass the Wheaties. And I'd say, son, it's better to die on your feet like a lion eating Wheaties than to be killed on your knees like a sheep who doesn't have any sugar for his Wheaties. Here's the Wheaties, boy. But they're out there. Okay, thank you, Tim from L.A. Bob just quoted Emilio Zapata. I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. And yes, Steve, that's exactly what I mean. Germanians and Belgiumians. Such as the Iraq. And all his and you know he told all his right-wing buddies, I'm going to be on that commie channel, MSNBC. I'll show them, by God, Melon Lave, brothers! I just love that because I've got this mental image of a whole bunch of pasty-faced, doughy white guys sitting around somewhere with little toothbrushes scrubbing away on cantaloupes. Melon Lave! Marty, I don't even know what that means. Bob, the show isn't showing on the TuneIn app. I mean, nothing's changed. I changed the wires, not the... no idea. So, a right-wing daddy from, I think, Oregon, as Tim points out in the chat room, is quoting a commie terrorist. You know what? Politics is not a continuum line that just extends forever in both directions. It's a circle. It's all a circle. The circle of life. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Carol pointing out, you know, it's interesting you would co-opt the message of one of the most radical liberal publications that were butchered in France from Charlie Hebdo. Yeah. They're not the brightest bulbs nor the sharpest box cutters in the drawer now, are they? And being Atne Ute Aitbre, if you one what I in may, yeah, this is a little bit difficult, but this is just a heads up for keep an eye out for this. You know, T-Rump had his huge, what a freaking clown. And that clown may very well be the Republican nominee. I'm not discounting the ability of his he has to become the Republican nominee for president because I know who the Republican base are. Melon scrubbers. Wolverines! Y'all. Had his big rally in Mobile. He was promising 40,000 people. He didn't get 40,000 people. He didn't fill up the stadium there. But he got a lot of people. And if you, I saw the photo coming from the Washington Post in their blog, The Fix. Let's break down this amazing Donald Trump picture from his Alabama rally. You know the Get a Brain Morans guy who has been internet famous ever since the invasion of Iraq now? And, of course, the Iraq such as girl from South Carolina who remains internet famous. Well, there is a woman in Alabama now. I presume she's in Alabama. She could be from Mississippi. It was Mobile, and it's in close proximity to Florida and to Mississippi, so I suppose there's a chance she's from one of those places. But she's at the rope line, the bunting-hung rope line. Hanged? To Alabama. And she's holding her precious little baby up to see T-Rump, and he's standing right there in front of her, and he's red. Make America great ball cap. Because Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. But somehow she and her baby got to the front of the rope line. And she has a look of pure rapturous exquisite joy on her face, and she got a mouth about 15 feet wide. And if she doesn't become part of just about probably every third meme you see on Facebook for the next couple of weeks, well, there's no justice. I mean, God favored her, because there were 12 gajillion million peoples in that stadium. Just ask T-Rump. And back behind the woman with the rapturous, well, honest to God, okay, so somewhere along the way you've picked up a copy of the Weekly World News back when it was still in print, or maybe on the internet you've seen him, Robin the Bat Boy, with that big wide open mouth. She looks like Robin the Bat Boy's sister all grown up. Robin the Bat Boy is in West Virginia, you know. I know talking about photographs on the radio just doesn't really cut it, but you're going to have to... this for the ages, this is. And back behind her, someone is holding up a sign that says in red, thank you, comma, and then in blue, Lord Jesus, comma, for president, and then Trump. As a longtime knower of words, I'm still having a hard time sorting out the syntax of that. Thank you, Lord Jesus, for President Trump. Or, thank you, Lord Jesus, for President Trump. I think it's all in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? This being radio, we don't do a lot of beholding. Tim, everything is on its head now. Tim from L.A. says, comma splice, Bob. But don't know. This is a crazy world we live in here as we move into the home stretch of finishing out 2015. It's a crazy world. And nothing makes sense anymore. The stock market's gone wild. We don't even have, we have infrastructure problems in this country. We don't even know if we have enough ledges to accommodate our billionaires. I don't know. Thank you, Lord Jesus, for President. But then if you read it, with the color cues, it's thank you, Jesus, Lord President Trump. There's already one meme out there that shows shows Robin the Bat Boy's sister, and it says, "Here, Mr. Trump, eat my baby." A dingo got me baby. Trump got the other. But the best one I've seen thus far is the one where in the very same photo every face in that photo has been replaced by the Robin the Bat Boy girl face. Which is kind of what it's like to go to a Republican rally. Just evil, ignorant clones. You'll see her. You'll see her. Believe you me, you'll see her. Ah, thank you, Michael in Madison. Subject line, tune-in app, loud and clear for me, now with 100% less power line hum. Oh, I'm sorry. Steve says, you mean all growed up. Speak proper, teabagger, Bob. All growed up. Mm-hmm. Okay. Hang on a minute here. Okay, thank you. Okay, great. So everybody who wants to see Robin the Bat Boy's twin sister, you can go over to the Horn Facebook page if you're already a member. If you're not, send a request, and you will be. It's by invitation only, you know. Kind of keeps the wing nuts down to a moderate roar. Sparky has posted the photograph over on the Horn Facebook page. Okay, so here we are, lo and behold, yea, verily, and forsooth. At the end of this Moran Monday filibobster, that does not, however, mean we are at the end of Moran Monday. Oh no, we got lots more Morans. Lots and lots of Morans. Yeah, I agree, Ron and Raleigh. This song has to fit somewhere. And here appears to be where that is. No, there are, and we have a for-profit media nominee. That's always good. Yeah. We're trying to get the week off to a decent start. You know, we try to raise $200 every evening. So far, we are at, nothing. So, hopefully that will change. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. You know the numbers, right? 304-574-8178 and 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Winchell, Joe DiMaggio, Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon, Studebaker, Television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe.
Litany of mid to late 20th century events, downright infectious, isn't it? This is the horn for Moran Monday, the fifth day. Oh, 7:05. It's the 24th day of August, 2015. You know, sometimes I think I'm just inundated with information. But Lord. But speaking of information, here's one to ponder. Right or wrong? Twitter has announced that they have shut down a series of different accounts that were run, overseen, I suppose is a better word, by an outfit called the Open State Foundation, the OSF. And as of Friday, August 21st, Twitter suspended their API access. Those of you more familiar with coding kind of stuff will understand the particulars of what that means. But the short answer is that they banned them from Twitter. The Open State Foundation ran a series of sites, I guess is the best word, collectively known as PolitiWhoops. PolitiWhoops. It was a collection of sites that aggregated tweets that primarily politicians tweeted and then deleted. You know, like when Rand Paul gets all drunky and gets out his phone and tweets, "White power, white lives matter," and then the next morning he's, "Oh my God," and they delete the tweet as if to pretend that the tweet never happened. Not saying that Rand Paul and that thing on his head ever did that, but you can imagine it happening, can't you? Yes, you certainly can. Twitter explained its decision by saying, "Imagine how nerve-wracking, terrifying even, tweeting would be if it was immutable and irrevocable. No one user is more deserving of that ability than another. Indeed, deleting a tweet is an expression of the user's voice. If you choose not to speak, you've still engaged in some form of non-speechy speech." Interestingly, the U.S. branch of PolitiWhoops has been gone since June. Because freedom. The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever! So the ability to archive the hateful, stupid things that American politicians, mostly right-wing ones, make has been, we've been trying to live with diminished freedom since June. Earther in the chat room says, "Never retweet, never sue Wender." And Wolverines! Hi, Bob. Hi, Earther. Isn't that kind of like saying that, because a tweet becomes history, does it not? There's nothing in the definition of history that it says it has to be exciting. History is what happened. And Twitter's tweets are history, especially when the tweets are made by people who are or deem themselves to be important. The British version of PolitiWhoops, which tweeted under the handle @deletedbymps, they got shut down by the Twitter decision. The Guardian reached out to Jules Mattson, who said, "It's a terrible shame that Twitter has made this decision. PolitiWhoops has been an important new tool in political accountability in the UK and abroad. Politicians are all too happy to use
social media to campaign, but if we lose the ability for this to be properly preserved, it becomes a one-way tool, which I think is exactly what it's meant to, what Twitter wants it to be, right? Because Twitter is still trying to figure out a way to make a dollar. And they wouldn't want to upset the money, being as how the money is already plenty upset. Imagine that. Global capitalism is finding out that maybe that whole China experiment wasn't such a good idea in the first place. The for-profit media were stunned to note that Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, had crawled out of his spider hole to address the issue when Apple never, ever, ever talks about the market, because they're above all that, they being Apple and everything. I mean, you would have thought that the world had spun to a halt this morning. You would have thought that that everybody had decided to stop shooting at each other, say, in places like Iraq and Syria and the almost non-existent border between Turkey and Syria. Oh, by the way, this being Moran Monday, here's a nominee. We've got a guy here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, who is a veteran. He claims to be an Army Ranger. He says he was a medic in Iraq and did recon and stuff. He's come home, and I don't know, maybe he didn't, maybe all of him didn't come home. Maybe he's among the tens of thousands of people we sent off to the Middle East to that unjust, ungodly, unholy, unlawful war, who paid the price there and continue to pay it now that they're home. But he just hasn't, it hasn't worked out. He hasn't fit in real well now that he's back, you know, back down by the creek. And one day he was watching the TV box, and he seen all about how the ISIS is a-running around in up-armored and under-armored Humvees that when we left the Iraq, we just said, well, here's a few billion dollars worth of equipment that we spent a small fortune to ship over here. We'll just leave it here with you, including tanks. And gave it to the military of the Iraq, such as. And now ISIS has it. Because even back during the origins of the war on the people of Iraq that was insisted upon by Dim Leader during the Reign of Error and his handler, Richard B. Big Time Dick Cheney, before he dicks you, we learned all the way back then that the Iraqi troops that we were going to train to fight for their own freedom, and when the Iraqis stand up, we'll stand down, and all that happy horse gobble they handed, that they didn't much want to stand up. They didn't want to fight. And so when ISIL showed up and with, you know, one poor bastard's head on a pike and said, Bruga, Bruga, they left all the stuff and just put their street clothes back on and said, no, I don't know nothing about no Iraqi army. Well, yeah. We knew it wasn't going to be a good idea to leave that stuff with them, but we did. But anyway, so dude says, a dude has joined up with about 20 other Americans, veterans, who say that they're going back to Iraq to aid the freedom fighters against ISIL. I might just mention along the way that dude down there in Fraser's Bottom or wherever don't speak a lick of the Arabic. No. He figures he's one of those types that figures he can just scream at them louder and call them Haji, and that'll sort things out.
But anyway, no more politi-whoops. Been gone from the U.S. since June, but now politi-whoops in Canada, Egypt, India, Ireland, South Korea, Tunisia, Turkey, Norway, and the U.K. It's gone, too. So is diplot-whoops, deleting archived tweets from diplomats. That's gone. Open State Foundation said these sites that have been extensively used and cited by journalists around the world. Arjan El Fased, who is the director of the organization, said, "What politicians say in public should be available to anyone. This is not about typos, but it is a unique insight on how messages from elected politicians can change without notice." So even though we still have 29 different varieties of, and counting of breakfast cereal to choose from, we're a little less free today. Yeah. So we got that going for us. This being More in Monday, let's toddle over to the Old Dominion. You know, Virginia, where in fact they have a university called Old Dominion University, and they have fraternities at Old Dominion University, and at least one of the fraternities is apparently filled with jerks. That fraternity would be Sigma Nu, also known as the Snooze. The Student Government Association has issued a statement saying, "An incident occurred this weekend that does not reflect the university's commitment to the prevention of sexual assault and dating violence. Not only do these actions taken by a few individuals undermine the countless efforts at Old Dominion University to prevent sexual assault, they are also unwelcome, offensive, and unacceptable." What's the cause of the consternation? It's in college and elsewhere. Big white sheets are often used as the medium upon which one paints one's message. It's the beginning of school. People, young people going to college for their first year, their freshman year. And so there at Sigma Nu on the campus of Old Dominion University, three bedsheet signs went up on the balcony of the Snoo House. Reading from left to right, the first one says, "Rowdy and fun," with the O-D and U, Old Dominion University, highlighted. "Rowdy and fun. Hope your baby girl is ready for a good time. Dot, dot, dot." And in the center, another sheet with an arrow pointing downward toward the front door. "Freshman daughter drop-off," and then to its immediate right, as we look at it, or as I do, you can look at it later, "Go ahead and drop off mom, too." Fraternities tend to operate on presumably democratic principles. You have all kinds of votes in fraternities. When to hold the party, how many kegs to buy, who will be in charge of the signs. So it's a pretty good bet that these signs went up with the approval of a majority of the membership of the Sigma Nu chapter at Old Dominion University. You know, you can't have Old Dominion without dumb. And so the Student Government Association and the University Administration are in damage control mode because the snooze at Old Dominion decided, I guess, that they should make them work overtime. It's creepy, and it's dumb, and it's indefensible. Amanda Marcotte, writing at Pandagon, says, let's be clear about one thing. Just because the signs imply rather than overtly call for force does not mean they aren't rape culture. This is how rape culture is, in fact, created, through winks and nudges rather than overt calls to force sex on women. Why, when I read that first sign, rowdy and fun, hope your baby girl is ready for a good time, why did I immediately think of Jared Fogle? Because he apparently liked little girls. Yeah, the goddess of irony misses nothing. Jared Fogle has spent a career trying to get into smaller pants. Stole that one from somewhere. But you remember, okay, so part of the reason that I mentioned that remark from the guy's father over on MSNBC this morning, I know the PC crowd won't like this, but the PC crowd's got to understand this is terrorism, PC crowd. It's automatic now, isn't it? Anytime the right wing doesn't like some element of repulsive conduct being called out, there you go. Christian Daytok, reporter. They have to put reporter under his name so that people will know he's a reporter. And, you know, if you're over at the Daily Caller, well, of course. Christian Daytok, reporter, writing at the Daily Caller, a piece called PC Police Sets Sight on Universities' Welcome Freshman Signs. Outrage has torn through Old Dominion University's campus after several signs welcoming incoming freshmen were deemed offensive, unwelcoming, and unacceptable by students and staff. ODU President John R. Broderick even addressed the signs on Facebook. The signs were on Facebook? I thought they were hanging from the balcony. Never mind. Christian Daytok is a reporter! Anyway, ODU President John R. Broderick. I said at my State of the University address that there's zero tolerance on this campus for sexual assault and sexual harassment. This incident will be reviewed immediately by those on campus empowered to do so. Any student found to have violated the code of conduct will be subject to disciplinary action. And then they quote the student government. Christian Daytok reporter's report is surprisingly absent much more in the way of detail. And the signs were posted to Facebook and were taken via screenshot by Huffington Post before being hastily deleted. And then Christian Daytok reporter says, on second thought, those are pretty bad. Carol noting, if I dropped my daughter off at that school, I'm the last mom those little pricks want to see coming through their door. Let the bitch slapping begin. And see, this is one of those moments where you wonder, and it's kind of like when that crowd in Cleveland just clapped and laughed and clapped some more when Megyn Kelly was describing T-Rump calling women
pigs and slobs and ugly. And they just laughed and collapsed. And then the Republicans who refused to say anything when a guy in Iowa suggests that we return, that we abrogate the 13th Amendment to the Constitution and return to slavery, nothing. And here, with Old Dominion University, now that's just PC police, not liking them having a look. No, it's awful. Even Christian Datok, reporter, said on second thought, those are pretty bad. But there's a larger question. The Student Government Association issued a statement against it. Dean Wormer of ODU is will face disciplinary action. But do we live in such terrified, tenuous times that maybe the other fraternities might have sent a member from each fraternity to say, hey, you're making us all look like crap. Get that garbage down. No? Guess not? Guess not. Amanda Marcotte cites a comment from the Washington Post comment section. Never go to the comment section, Marcotte. Amanda, never go there. It's a nasty place full of hateful people. The signs are crude and doom, but this repulsive habit of charging rape culture every time a male mentions sex with a female is even more crude, more dumb, and far more dangerous. There's absolutely nothing in the signs, at least not the ones in the photo, that even implies non-consensual sex. These lunatics throw around rape the way Joe McCarthy flung around communist, and with just as much concern for truth and justice as he did. There's nothing that implies non-consensual sex. Hope your baby girl is ready for a good time. Freshman daughter drop-off. Go ahead and drop off mom, too. Oh, well, they're just saying they're equal opportunity, and they wouldn't mind having a gangbang with mama. There's no threat of rape there. This country. But that's okay. The problem is that us liberals, we don't appreciate the broad range of human expression. You know how I know this? Because Fox. Yeah.
Have you seen this story? A school district in Tennessee banned the Confederate flag in the wake of the drama over the Confederate flag, some saying it's the root of America's problems, and in so doing decided because...
Yeah, in the wake of the drama over the Confederate flag. Said drama having been occasioned by a kid from South Carolina who said the Klan's just talking on the internet and nobody's willing to take action, so I guess it's up to me. And what he meant by up to me was he would take a freedom protector, to wit, a firearm, a Second Amendment bastion of patriotism. And he did, and he marched into a church in Charleston, South Carolina, and murdered 9 people, not the least of which was the assassination of a sitting senator from that state. You know, that drama over the Confederate flag.
Have you seen this story? A school district in Tennessee banned the Confederate flag in the wake of the drama over the Confederate flag, some saying it's the root of America's problems, and in so doing decided because they can't make fine distinctions between flags they like and flags they don't, they were banning all flags, and that would include the American flag itself, which students are no longer able to display at school.
Yeah, you know, it was only a matter of time before this happened. So apparently a lot of students were hanging flags on the back of their, you know, their cars, their pickup trucks, their SUVs and things, particularly on Football Friday, showing their patriotism or their heritage to the Confederacy. And
I like a little oil and vinegar on my word salad. Showing their heritage to the Confederacy. Their heritage to the Confederacy. Showing. It's a present participle, is it not? Which kind of implies that the Confederacy is a present going concern, doesn't it? Showing their heritage to the Confederacy. Hey, Confederacy, see my heritage? Oh, forget about it, Jake. It's Fox.
Back of their, you know, their cars, their pickup trucks, their SUVs and things, particularly on Football Friday, showing their patriotism or their heritage to the Confederacy. And it was causing...
Did she mean allegiance to the Confederacy? I don't know. It's a Fox attack blonde. And I don't know which attack blonde it is. They all look the same to me.
Some problems that the school district decided to not just ban the Confederate flag, but the American flag as well. The one exception, though, you see, is still on the flag pole at the school. So at least that's good.
Hey, wait a minute. Far be it from me to maybe think this, but does that kind of make sense? Where else do flags belong other than flagpoles? Okay, on caskets. Hopefully, there won't be any caskets at that high school anytime soon. Well, but there may be, because remember, this is Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. And the butcher's bill may come due at that high school. We never know where the Second Amendment butcher's bill is going to come due next. We just know it's going to come due. Somewhere, somehow, sometime, it's going to come due. But, right, okay, so flags, okay, veterans caskets, okay. Police killed in the line of duty, firefighters, sure. But we have no reason to think that that's going to happen at that high school anytime soon. So flags really do belong on flagpoles. Not... not on decals on cars. Not on the seat of Daisy Duke shorts or men's denim. Not on t-shirts. And not flying off the back of a pick-em-up truck, because that puts the, at least according, I think, to the American Legion, who is the official repository of all things related to flag etiquette, not dangling, drooping, or dragging from your pick-em-up truck, because that puts the flag in jeopardy of being soiled or dishonored. And after that happens, well, you have to burn the flag, and ain't nobody wants to do that now, do they? No. Not on a t-shirt. Not on a house. Not with a mouse. Not in a boat. Not with a goat. Not in the rain. Not in the train. No. Bear with me. This is a fun story. Let's get back to the morons from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, including, of course, Tucker Carlson.
And then Dickinson County Director of Student Services, Steve Sorrells, said this about what they're trying to do there. Listen.
While this was not necessarily an attack on the American flag, there were some other issues we're trying to address. It's not an unpatriotic act by any means, because we have a number of ways in which students do learn how to be patriotic and express American pride. We do have responsibility to help our students understand citizenship, proper respect for the flag, and what that might look like.
Now, oddly enough, and I realize this has been a program with a whole lot of references to visuals, and I apologize for that, but tucked in there, because this thing gets put together by someone who is paid to edit video inside Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, there is a couple of seconds showing a fluttering American flag, which isn't necessarily even at Creekwood High School. And the fluttering American flag has, in soft focus behind it, "I'll be dipped." That's urine-colored snake flag. And there's nothing there to suggest that this was something that was flying at that high school in Dickinson County, Tennessee. It's just something that a video editor there at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, following the Fox Manual Inflame the Octogenarian Style Guide, tucked away in it. Beautiful.
And students aren't happy about it, by the way. One of the high school seniors went on the record and talked to the local news station there. Here's what Ariana had to say. Listen, she's a high school senior.
If you want to fly a Confederate flag,
I think you should still be able to.
And if you want to fly a rainbow flag, fly a rainbow flag. Whatever you want.
Yeah, whatever you want, because, you know, the rainbow flag is the same thing as the Confederate flag. I mean, the Confederate flag is part of, it was the flag of a nation that wanted to continue to enslave black people, and the rainbow flag is the flag of people who want to enslave heterosexual people and make them gay marry. It's the same thing.
Exactly.
I just think
exactly.
They shouldn't be able to, that's like a right, you can't like, it's like a freedom of expression, and I don't think that you should be able to take that away from us.
It's like a freedom of expression, and I don't even know what that is. First Amendment? I was absent that day.
So this is not about a school district in Tennessee. This is about a long-term trend where the people who run everything, the elites in Washington, New York, and L.A., despise rural America and its culture, suspect anybody who doesn't live in their cities of being a bigot, and they're trying to crush that culture by banning its symbols, not just the Confederate flag, but the American flag. They hate expressions of patriotism. It makes them uncomfortable.
Yeah,
let's be honest.
And America.
The liberal elites in Washington, D.C., L.A., and New York hate rural America. And that was Tucker Carlson's voice, by the way. It could be none other. And they hate expressions of patriotism. By the way, this whole thing is fonted with patriotism pulled down. American flag banned at Tennessee School District. Mm-hmm. And the Iraq, such as.
Feeling guilty about being American for some reason, or not having patriotism like we used to. Come on, America, let's wake up and before the American flag ends up in a museum.
When you'll know
in a museum? What a horrible place for the American flag to be in a museum! Actually, I think there are several American flags in several museums. Because that's how we preserve something that is deemed historically significant to us. Maybe, I don't know. The flag that flew over Fort McHenry in Baltimore Harbor, okay? The one that Francis Scott Key saw and wrote a poem about that they then set to the music of an old English drinking song, and it became our national anthem. I think that flag is in a museum somewhere, maybe in the Smithsonian, possibly in the National Archives. I'm not sure. I mean, there's how about the American flag that flew at Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor? We got this thing with forts and harbors, and it doesn't work out well.
And it was pulled down when Fort Sumter surrendered after being fired upon by a bunch of people committed to treason against their own. Well, I mean, treason is against your own country, isn't it? Might that be in a museum somewhere? Wake up, people, says the Fox Attack blonde, before the flag is in a museum.
Mm-hmm. Notice that no one in Waco, Texas is banning the rainbow flag. It's a one-way deal. You have one small culture with all the money and all the power in America trying to crush everyone else. It doesn't.
Tucker, why don't you just say the Jews? Because that's what this code is.
And the liberal elites in New York and Washington and Los Angeles. Yeah.
Because if you do, then the next thing you know, you're the only people you're allowed to run around with is like Mel Gibson. But that's just anti-Semitic code. It's the protocols of the learned elders of Zion all over again. He knows.
Go both ways.
June on Facebook wrote us, says, I agree that you have an absolute right.
Oh, that was close now, wasn't it? June on Facebook.
To do whatever you wish on your own property. When you enroll in school, you agree to obey their rules. That's just the way it is.
And Ed on Facebook says, fly any flag you want, and like free speech, people can make comments about it. That's freedom.
Freedom! Now, here's the denouement to the whole thing. Now, that is 2 minutes and 59 seconds of real, live, genuine, honest-to-God, right-wing fulminating, courtesy of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Here's the punchline. It's all a lie. The American flag has not been banned in Dickinson County schools in Tennessee. Or probably anywhere else in Tennessee, although there are places in Tennessee and Alabama and Mississippi Stan and Georgia Stan, etc., such as, where they'd like to. And, of course, the home of American sedition, South Carolina. They did not ban the American flag at all, ever. The whole thing is a dummied up, faked up, frauded up, ginned up, rubed up lie. The school district and the city government have each put out a statement saying the whole thing was a filthy, rotten lie. Courtesy of Fox. Yeah. Reminds me of something. I think this sort of begs for a little musical interlude. And maybe during the couple of minutes or so that takes place, we'll move off of the schneid and get above zero for this evening's fundraising. Yeah. This is listener-supported conversation radio. We'll be right back. This is a short song, but it just fits so damned well.
While digesting Reader's Digest in the back of the dirty bookstore, a plastic flag with gum on the back fell out on the floor. Well, I picked it up and I ran outside, slapped it on the window shield. And if I could see old Betsy Ross, I'd tell her how good I feel. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. Morning, And the cashier said to me, if you join the Christmas club, we'll give you 10 of them flags for free. Well, I didn't mess around a bit. I took him up on what he said, and I stuck them stickers all over my car and one on my wife's forehead. But your flag gal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag gal won't get you into heaven anymore. Well, I got my windshield so filled with flags I couldn't see, so I ran the car upside a curb right into a tree. By the time they got a doctor down, I was already dead. And I'll never understand why the man standing in the pearly gates said, but your flag gal won't get you into heaven anymore. We're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag gal won't get you into heaven anymore.
See what I mean? I mean, that, and even the reference to your dirty little war, that's a Vietnam reference. But hey, John Prine may have written that 40 years ago. But guess what? It still works. See, he didn't date the song by saying Vietnam. So that way we can say Iraq, such as. Yeah. By the way, going back to a reference I made earlier, a note coming in from Brother Deacon Asa in Vancouver. He says, Brother Bob, the phrase raghead is rather offensive. I believe the PC nomenclature is towel wrapper. Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. We regret the mistake. Okay, so I think we have sorted out the tune-in controversy. Jeremy also confirmed loud and clear on tune-in. Good, good, good. Thank you. Oh, and thank you very kindly to Jack in Shreveport. We are now off the fundraising schneid, and we've only got $180 to go this evening. Thank you very much. It's a tough thing when we start crawling in the hole the first day of the week. Yeah. And Marty also noting something. I want to see the reaction when the live-action version of Johnny Quest hits the screens. Will the Morans finally recognize that Haji is one, from India, and two, Johnny's best friend? Yeah, but Johnny's obviously a liberal because his daddy's one of them scientist people. America don't need no science. And there's no way you get through Moran Monday on the horn without a visit from Jebya. Well, I tell you what, I was down at the Rippy Mart earlier today, and ran into this lady who's. Son is, she said, yeah, he's gone back to college. I said, oh, really? Where's he going? She said, Liberty. I said, well, oh, my. And I wasn't being a jerk, okay? I want you to understand, I try to be nice and kind and decent to just about everybody. She asked after Ferg. Looked like she had a mouthful of green persimmons. And I said, well, and how's your boy? And he's gone back to college. I said, where's he going? She said, Liberty. I said, well, isn't that wonderful? He's going to have a convocation real soon where he's going to get to hear He's going to get to hear Bernie Sanders speaking. Bernie is speaking some truth. It'll be mandatory for the young man to attend those convocations at Liberty. I think they do some marching up and down the square, too. But, yeah, everybody has to attend. No excuses. And she said, yeah, they've already had a lot of people, a lot of good speakers there. I said, yeah, I know. Jeb Bush, he spoke at the commencement there. And it took her a minute, and you could see the wheels turning as she processed Jeb Bush, and then she remembered W, and she realized what I was doing. And it looked like she just took another bite out of another green persimmon. And she said, yeah, and that other fella, he kicked off his presidential campaign there, didn't he? I said, yeah, you mean Rafael Eduardo Cruz? The Canadian guy? And she took another bite of that persimmon. I don't mean to, but yeah. So yeah, enter Jebya. Gawker reporting on the fact that Jebya has made use, and really, it's a problem for Jebya. He used the phrase, he used the phrase anchor babies. Now, this all started when CNN reported that Jebya used the phrase anchor babies as they're described when he was in the process of discussing the right-wing frenzy to end birthright citizenship, which would basically end citizenship for everybody born in the United States, leaving only naturalized citizens as the real citizen. And, you know, I think when it comes to birthright citizenship, maybe the native population might have something to say about that. Secret note to Ron in Raleigh. I am not going to read your latest email. I am not going to use that phrase. No, really. Absolutely not. Mm-mm. No, can't make me. No. So, the Clinton campaign jumped on Jebya for using the phrase anchor babies. Because God knows they got to have something. Anything to stop talking about the email controversy. And it is. I mean, I support Bernie. I'm not going to be hateful or negative toward Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton. And the email thing is just, it won't go away. But I don't think she did anything wrong. You know, as in at all. So there was a Twitter war. They're tweeting back and forth at each other. It's that same old squabble from 1992. The Clintons squabbling with Bushes and Bushes squabbling at Clintons. I was younger then and my hair was still reddish blonde. It's the only thing that's changed. Well, I mean, there are a few more thousand dead Americans from Jebya's brother's filthy little wars. But apart from that. So Jebya got in hot water for using the phrase anchor babies, and he should. Nobody should use that phrase unless they're reporting on the phenomenon. And Jebya is not a reporter. Jebya's a politician. Yeah, he's also a grifter.
most assuredly a grifter. As Robert up near Morgantown pointed out to me, or was it Robert? Well, anyway, someone pointed out to me that Trump, T-Rump, had tweeted out a story from some source pointing out that Jebbia moved Florida pension funds to, what was it, Lehman Brothers? And then Lehman Brothers tanked, and Florida pensioners took it in the shorts. But Jebbia Bush walked away with a cool $1.3 million. Nice. Good work if you can get it. So he was forced, Jebbia was, to address his anchor baby's comment while he was down in McAllen, Texas, which sits on the Mexican border. You know who I bet didn't appreciate the anchor baby's comment? Mrs. Bush. Columba. Thank you, Ron. I understand. Ron says, well, Brother Asa thought Raghead was offensive. I was just giving you credit for not using an even more offensive appellation. Thank you, and I will continue not to use it. Yes. So, enter Jebbia, who, you know, the mystery with Jebbia is not that he's going to stick his foot in his mouth. The mystery with Jebbia is always a matter of how he's going to get the other one in there with it. Let's find out.
Excuse me?
Do you worry that using the term anchor babies could affect your ability to win the Hispanic vote?
Look, as I said in Spanish, my background, my life, the fact that I'm immersed in the immigrant experience, this is ludicrous.
He's doing that again! Jebbia Bush, immersed in the immigrant experience. The last time he tried that one out, he was telling everybody what a kick-ass guacamole recipe he had. I don't know if he's going to get to that or not. But yes, Jebbia Bush is immersed in the immigrant experience. Because he married an immigrant who became a naturalized citizen. Who, when they get rid of birthright citizenship, will be a citizen, but Jebbia won't. Awful early in the week to be putting the swirly straw in the tequila bottle, I'm telling you. I want to hear more about this immigrant experience. It's from it. These remarks are all from his forthcoming bestseller, Latino Like Me, Jebbia Bush.
This is ludicrous for the Clinton campaign and others to suggest that somehow I'm using a derogatory term. What I was talking about was the specific case of fraud being committed where...
Okay, hockey pucks? Did I forget the hockey puck warning? Wait. Let me get the nearest thing we've got to a klaxon going. Hockey puck. Get the hockey puck. Because while he may have been potty trained by Mother Bush at gunpoint, there were some lessons she never got across to him, one of which was the first law of holes. Now, you all know it. I know it. We know it. The Horn Family Commune Congregation knows the first law of holes. But Jebbia doesn't. The first law of holes says when you're in one, stop digging. But Jebbia's not going to put down the shovel. Because, see, he needs to explain what he meant when he said anchor babies. Don't think you can just bite that. No, you're going to want the duct tape, too. You'll be hooting like a barn owl.
What I was talking about was the specific case of fraud being committed where there's organized efforts, and frankly, it's more related to...
before we get there. Tim, a secret special message to Tim from L.A. Yes, you're in the chat room. Good. Extra strip of duct tape on your hockey puck, please. Okay?
Not being committed where there's organized efforts, and frankly, it's more related to Asian people coming into our country, having children, in that organized efforts, taking advantage of a noble concept with his birthright citizenship. I support the 14th Amendment. Nothing about what I've said is should be viewed as derogatory towards immigrants at all.
Do you have that, America? You got that? Jebya wants you to understand, because you need to have it explained to you by Jebya, that when he talks about anchor babies, he's talking more about Asians. Mm-hmm. The inscrutable Asians. Sneaking all the way across the Pacific Ocean to have babies in America that will anchor them to this country in an organized effort. What the hell does he mean, an organized effort? I mean, what that... what... the Yakuza? Whole bunch of nine-fingered people coming over from Japan and having babies to put a foothold down here in North America so that they can shoot it out with the Cosa Nostra on the streets of freaking Vegas? What? Hi, than me. Earther says that's why their eyes are like that. They're sneaky that way. You know what we learned from this? We learned that Pappy Bush is still sitting around telling stories about his heroic activities in World War II. I'll bet he still uses the fun ethnic slurs, too. They're both only four letters long. One begins with J, the other begins with N. They have P's and S's, and it's just a matter of vowels, rather. So are we clear, America? Have you got that, Hillary? Hillary, did you get the message? Quit criticizing him for using the term anchor babies. Because he's clearly talking about the Asians. Man, he was down in that hole, and he took that shovel, and he got a whole nother spade full of earth and threw it up over the top of the hole, didn't he? I support birthright citizenship. Well, good, Jebya. You know why it's good you support birthright citizenship? Because it's part of the Constitution. And the job you say that you would like to have, and your own mother doesn't think you need, will require you to swear an oath to that Constitution. Correct? Correct. Is he talking about the Vietnamese people that we resettled here so that they wouldn't be slaughtered on sight for having been compliant with the United States occupiers during the Vietnamese War, so we brought them over and they settled in places like Houston and along the Gulf Coast and in the Pacific Coast of California and places. Is that what we're talking? Is that the organized effort he's talking about? Is that why it's noble? Lost, totally freaking lost. But still, let's enjoy it again.
in its fullness.
Organized efforts taking advantage of a noble concept with his birthright citizenship. I support the 14th Amendment. Nothing about what I've said should be viewed as derogatory towards immigrants at all. This is all how politics plays. And by the way, I think we need to take a step back and chill out a little bit as it relates to the political correctness that somehow you have to be scolded every time you say something. It's not fair to be taken out of context. That's the nature of politics. But I just don't think that this is appropriate.
And lo, a theme develops on More and Monday on the Horn. PC. Political correctness. I think we need to chill out, dude. And not be so PC about things. I mean, just because I say anchor babies, I mean, you all think I mean people like who are Latino, like my children half are, when I obviously mean Asian people. Correction coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Bob, I believe you mean the triad snakeheads. The Yakuza don't work that way. Damn! Missed it again. Well, this one has a self-playing bumper. And we'll take a break. Oh, by the way, fundraising got better. Thank you, Carol Baker. You're a giver. The fundraising goal is now, let's see, 108, 160, 153, $152.37. We're back to the 37 cents. It's becoming a recurring theme. 152.37 to go for fundraising this evening. 152.37. I better jot that down. You think I'm kidding? That's a one and a dot and a three. Okay. And I like to make my sevens with that slash in the middle of it. Makes people around here think I'm writing an F. Mm-hmm. All right. We're into the last hour of the program. Don't wait till the last 10 minutes of the program and go, oh, I just got to tell him. No. You jump right in if you want to. 304-574-8178, 304-663-4676, or Skype to Skype, which is always free from just about anywhere in the planet that they allow Skype to run. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, and a little note, we always welcome first-time callers. Get a lot of long-time listeners, never callers. And if there's a burr under your saddle or a bee under your bonnet, and that is without regard to gender, jump right in. Absolutely. Because, after all, this is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
picture so I can look at you from the side as well. You got me turning up, I'm turning down, I'm turning in, I'm turning down, I'm turning Japanese. I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. Turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. Turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. Turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. No sex, no drugs, no wine, no women, no fun, no sin, no you, no wonder it's dark. Everyone around me is a total stranger. Everyone avoids me like a cyclone ranger. Everyone. That's why I'm turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. Turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. Turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so.
Forgot the cold ending there, didn't I? Not quite. Yeah, it was pretty quick on the draw. That, of course, the great masturbation anthem. Never mind. 12 minutes after 8 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, which continues the daylight savings time. Thank you, Randy. Continues up through early November, I believe. Had a note from Randy a couple of minutes ago. He noted, Wall Street's Dow Jones Industrial Average lost nearly another 600 points today. It's now trading in the 15,000s. Can you imagine jumping into your hot tub time machine and going back to the 1960s and explaining to someone that it was as high as the 18,000s, but then the Chinese economy collapsed? Oh, you'd go away in one of those lovely white canvas jackets that buttons through the crotch and has sleeves that tie in the back. Plastics, I'm telling you, plastics. And of course, the my proposed bumper, by the way, thank you, Haley in Arkansas, noting that your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. Best bumper ever. Thank you. Now, my bumper for the Wall Street story was just going to be Van Halen's Jump. But, of course, the jumping Wall Street wealthy from the stock market crash in 1929, that's an urban myth. I think it's something that was developed in the Depression out of the wishful thinking of the people who were really suffering for the decisions that were made by the captains of industry and titans of finance. Because oddly enough, many of them went on being quite wealthy, thank you very much. It remains to be seen if the free fall will continue. I thought poor Jose Diaz-Balart was going to have a baby on air because morning squint ended and they tossed to him just as the stock market opened. And it went from like down 600 to down 1,000 in about 15 seconds. And among other things, and you can tell when the market's nervous because they start sending out ludicrous financial speak twaddle with it. Well, you know, of course, some of these precipitous drops are happening because of it's because of computerized trade. I mean, these things happen in a matter of micro milliseconds, Fred. And, well, doggone it! I mean, they've been placed and they just happen automatically. And I mean, it doesn't really reflect the fact. I mean, China's economy is still growing. I mean, there's still a lot of people in China who want an iPhone, and there's a lot of people in China who want a bowl of rice too. But we're not allowed to because they're capitalists now, and there's wealth all over the place in China. And yeah, but the problem is, you know, what was it last week, week before last, when the Chinese government just said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to devalue the currency. Yeah. And all those titans of industry and captains of finance on Wall Street, you're going to what? And so the experts, well, you know, Bill, what this really means is that a lot of people who are heavily invested in China, they're going to reinvest in America now because the dollar is sound as the pound. What the hell am I saying? I don't know. I'm scared to death. My retirement just disappeared. Oh, there'll be some profit taking. This is a correction. We badly needed a correction. Wall Street has been desperately yearning for a proper spanking and to be told it's been a naughty, naughty boy for quite some time, and we've been trying to find someone we could pay to do it, but apparently we wound up getting the Chinese to do it, and well, that turned out to be a little bit kinkier than we planned on. Let's go to Bill in the Weather Center. I'm going to wear out the Bill in the Weather Center joke, but by God, it's real. By the way, another thing that they hesitated but wound up breaking into the Wall Street story with. We've got another story for you now. Thank you, Bill. We've got another story for you now. It's a sad story out of Louisiana. The veteran Louisiana state trooper who was shot in the head with a sawed-off shotgun Friday has died. And I'd seen the story. You've seen the story. What do you mean Bill left the Weather Center? I'm tired of your abuse. No, I'd seen the story, and it's horrible. And it is part of the dangers of being part of law enforcement. Granted, there are a lot of other occupations in this country where you are far more likely to be killed on the job than by being a policeman. But people reported a pick-em-up truck in the ditch. And so he drives up to find out what's going on. And when he walks up to the car, a white guy, takes a sawed-off shotgun and shoots him in the head. And then apparently just sat around and waited to be arrested. The head of the Louisiana State Police said that he had seen the body cam video. That's got to be ugly and horrifying. And I'm waiting for the statement from the NRA.
Well, this man was obviously deranged.
Well, if he was obviously deranged, why did he have a gun?
Oh, I mean, yeah, a sawed-off shotgun, and everybody knows sawed-off shotguns are illegal.
Okay, but you're not so happy about
it? Well, I, personally, we believe that when sawed-off shotguns are only outlaws will have sawed-off shotguns. Guy was obviously an outlaw.
Butcher's bill came due in Louisiana. And it's a sad and a sorry moment. Thanks, Obama. Why do I say that? Because of the head of the police union in liberal Seattle, Washington. Yeah. The alternate weekly in Seattle is called The Stranger. And it notes in an article that the Seattle Police Officers Guild president, Ron Smith, he represents about 1,200 police officers as president of the guild. And this all arises out of a Facebook post at the SPOG, S-P-O-G, Facebook page. Someone posted a commentary by Fox News host Kimberly Guilfoyle. That post said, "The White House and this administration have created a war against police officers in this country with their allegations, false assertions that there's widespread and pervasive racism in the United States of America that lives in the hearts and minds of the men and women in blue." And Ron Smith posted underneath the video, "True." It had 50 likes before it got deleted. Ansel Hertz, who writes for The Stranger, contacted Ron Smith and said, asked him, "Are those your actual views?" And he stood by the statements and said that critics need to get past their anti-cop bias. Via text message, Ansel Hertz wrote back, "That's the message you're putting out as head of the union. It's beyond the pale." And Ron Smith responded, "Yep, the administration's message has fueled the war on cops. Quote me." "Quote me," he said. So then other people asked him what he meant. And he said, "I don't want to get in the weeds about the message." War on cops. Oddly enough, despite the predilection for Thanks Obama, I'm guessing, because I saw his picture, and he's a really, really scary-looking white guy who apparently got either, you know what, he probably busted his face on the steering wheel when he went into the ditch. That's how his face got beat up. Because he was being led, I saw the video, he was being led quietly away by a pair of Louisiana State Troopers, just being walked kindly and patiently and respectfully back to the cruiser to be taken and processed for first-degree freaking murder. Yeah, I mean, they didn't send a van to give him a rough ride back to the station. No. They didn't shoot him and leave him laying in the middle of the road there in Louisiana in the August heat to serve as a warning to other pasty-faced, doughy would-be cop killers. No. They walked him respectfully back to the cruiser. On the other hand, however, careful how you laugh. When you laugh. Where you laugh. One of the people that you don't want to... or one of the places that you don't want to be doing a whole lot of laughing is apparently on the Napa Valley wine train tour. I've seen this on the Food Network. I'll never do it. Probably costs a damn fortune. But you can get on a train somewhere in Napa Valley, and you ride the train, and you look out the window at all the fields and fields and fields of vineyards, and they bring you a glass of this wine, and they say,
oh, this wine has lovely overtones of old baseball glove and machine oil. And you sip and you sniff and you go, why, yes, yes, it does. And then they bring you another glass of maybe a white wine, and they say, and this wine is redolent with the taste of crisp dandelion leaves and rotting pine cones. And you go, oh, yes, of course it does. I mean, that's how it's, that's what the, I mean, that's what I've seen on the foodie shows and stuff back when I watched that kind of thing. But not always. 11 black women took the Napa Valley wine train, and they stopped the train. The proprietor of the wine train did. And booted the 11 women who were not white off said train. Napa Valley Wine Train spokeswoman Kira Devitt said the company received complaints from several parties in the same car, and after three attempts from staff requesting that the group keep the noise to an acceptable level, they were removed from the train and offered transportation back to the station in Napa. Because they were laughing and talking too loudly. Because that has never happened before in the entire history of the Napa Valley Wine Train. I mean, wine aficionados know that wine is no laughing matter. So this is birthed a new hashtag, laughing while black. ...47-year-old Lisa Johnson said, it was humiliating. I'm really offended, to be quite honest. I felt like it was a racist attack on us. I feel like we were being singled out. Probably because they were. Lisa Renee Johnson on Facebook said, Facebook family, we have a problem. We sipped wine, enjoyed each other's company, but our trip is being cut short. This woman, and there's a picture of course, a stern and cranky-looking white lady, said our laughter annoyed her because this is not a bar. We're a group of 12. If we all laugh at the same time, it's loud. When we get to St. Helena, they're putting us off the train. They don't know it's not a bar. This is not some sort of publican house next to a bordello. It costs a lot of money to get on this wine train and feel really superior drinking wine that probably is being served to us from a goddamn cardboard box, but we don't know it because we're stupid. It's not a bar. This is a train. And granted, bars and trains both have wine on them and beer and stuff. There's no beer in here either. Don't even ask for it. So it's not a bar, even though the train has a bar in it, or else it couldn't serve the wine, because bars are where you have the tools for the serving of alcoholic beverages. Inquiring of one of the maitre d', they said, who's complaining? He said, people's faces are uncomfortable. Jesus! They had uncomfortable faces. I mean, old ladies, 50, 60, but, you know, there ain't going to be no laughing black people on no Napa Valley wine train
because, you know, the next thing you know, more of those people will want to be riding it. And we didn't go through all that shit with Plessy versus Ferguson just to have it get ruined in Napa. Desperate to try to deal with the PR nightmare they created for themselves, the Napa Valley Wine Train posted, "Whenever any guest has an issue on board, it is our policy to address it, be it a meal not prepared to the requested way, a missing glass of wine, or an issue with another guest. Our management team attempted to address the issue with the party, but those attempts were ignored. The Wine Train has its own railroad police that escort the train every day. Following verbal and physical abuse towards other guests and staff, it was necessary to get our police involved. Many groups come on board and celebrate. When those celebrations impact our other guests, we do intervene. Today, we were unable to relocate parties due to the train being sold out, so we made accommodations in the form of transportation back to Napa. If you would like to chat with our team, please email social@winetrain.com. So, in other words, the white people didn't like the black people, so since there weren't any extra seats, using the Plessy theory, they stopped the train and threw the black people off of it. Because that's how we accommodate our other passengers. Riding that train high on Merlot. Nope, won't sing. I'm going to stop. I'm glad I'm not a wine drinker. I can get kind of snotty over beer and some liquors, but that's the reputation wine snobs have. You know, a beer snob might talk about the relative merits of a saison versus an IPA, a double IPA, hops versus not hops. But you know what? If you hand the beer snob a glass of PBR, the beer snob will gladly drink that too. But, frankly, it would not break my heart if this absolutely ruined the Napa Wine Train.
Well, it's already been ruined for us by letting those people on it.
Jesus. Hey, it's Ron in Canada. What's up, Ron?
Well, hello, Bob.
How in the world are you?
I'm reasonable, barely adequate, and ticked off.
Stay off the wine train, will you?
I'm on the Evan Williams train tonight.
Oh, that can be a hard train to ride. And it comes to a screeching halt the next morning.
I just got finished 2 hours of digging through paperwork to respond to a fairly firm request for an immediate response from the Canada Revenue Agency to disclose all of my business tax records for the year 2012. That's damn near in the last century.
God, yeah.
I have them all. Do you know how long it takes to bundle those little suckers together?
Oh, I can only imagine.
And then you put it in an envelope, and our not-to-be-privatized postal authority went $4.12 to send them off to a place 4 blocks away.
Can't walk it.
Yeah, that's right. They do not accept drop-offs. I drive right by that goddamn building every morning on my way to work.
Careful how you talk about that building. That might be hate speech where you are.
Oh, we're not that far along yet. Hell, we don't even have a wine train, Bob.
Yeah, but is there like a poutine ferry or something maybe across? I don't know.
I haven't asked any of them. But in any event,
well, but I mean, but Canadians never laugh uproariously, do you? I mean, you sort of titter quietly amongst yourselves. I mean,
oh no, oh hell yeah, we can break loose.
Granted, as an American, I laughed uproariously at kids in the hall. Oh my God, I'm a geezer, but you get the idea.
Yeah. We have a slightly different sense of humor. I've actually heard people laugh out loud. Hard to believe. And then they got thrown out of the bar.
I mean, but, like a guffaw?
Absolutely.
Up with this, we will not put.
Our prime minister's even been known to chuckle out loud occasionally.
Yeah, but that's only when they set fire to like 100 years of archaeological records or something like that.
Right? Or a liberal.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I had myself a really interesting weekend. We're digressing from everything political here, by the way. I volunteered again to be a scorekeeper for a Canadian PGA tournament being held here at a course in Ottawa that I play on fairly often. And
is that like next summer or something? Because isn't golf season over?
No, that was this last week.
Oh.
And Thursday and Friday, I was up to my eyebrows in entertaining people from the sandbox, which is another story. But Saturday and Sunday were Ron's time. So I showed up, shut up, and I carried a standard, as it's called, which is the walking scorer who goes down the fairway 15 feet behind the two or three players.
Oh, I know exactly what it is.
And it is a wonderful position to watch people play golf who know how to play golf.
Yes.
And I did that Saturday and Sunday. Saturday, I went off with the group that was the second from the last.
Thursday, ooh, the leaders.
Pretty close. And one guy shot 2 under par, and the other guy shot 4 under par, and they both moved down the leaderboard.
Damn.
And the
course,
next day,
course took a whooping.
Yeah, it did. It was a day after fairly heavy rain. Sunday was a different story. I was once again teamed up with one of the two guys from the previous day, and they shot 3 under and 5 under, and one of the guys moved up. The other guy stayed right where he was, 20 under one. But I got to tell you, watching a little this guy I had for both days, 5'11", 160 pounds soaking wet, 4% body fat. When he walked, he just sort of glided.
Hit a 250-yard 5-iron, didn't he?
He hit, yep, that's about right. On the
Oh, no, that's what it is with those damn pros. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, they just, for those who don't play the game, a 250-yard 5-iron is just freaking ridiculous.
If he hadn't been playing a fluorescent yellow ball, which you're seeing more and more of now on the tour, I wouldn't have been able to keep track of where his drives were going. This kid on the hole where they measured the yardage, on Saturday hit 351 yards with a draw. So high it must have shown up on the radar from the airport. Sunday he hit 355 yards. And it was amazing to watch these guys up until they got on the putting green.
Wait, this was a PGA event?
Yep, a Canadian PGA.
Oh.
The top five guys get on the web.com tour, and they are fighting to get on there. That's your ticket to the big show and big money and all of that. So they're intense. But they're remarkable up until they get on the putting green. They're chipping and putting. A bunch of us from the golf course there all said, yeah, we could putt as well as they do. They were miss. I saw putts miss from 18 inches, which you just don't expect from a pro.
So was it? I mean, were the greens particularly brutal? I mean, were they putting through big chunks of Poani or what?
Nope. They had been rolled. They were smooth. They just didn't detect all the little subtle breaks that most of us know about. And
locals.
Yeah, local knowledge. But we are not allowed to tell them a thing. We're not allowed to even tell them where the sprinklers are, sprinkler heads that are marked, and we remove all of the yardage markers, the 200, 150, and 100 markers that are usually in the center of the fairway, and they have to figure everything out on their own. But it was amazing to watch. First day I had one kid from Zimbabwe, black guy, 27, working his way up on the tour, paying his own way, couldn't afford a caddy, so we had a local guy carrying his bag and cleaning his clubs. That's all the caddy had to do. He figured his own yardage, his angles, and I saw this kid make some just absolutely phenomenal shots. Because when you hit it 350 yards and you're just slightly offline, you're in places where most of us don't have a clue how to get to a green, and he would figure out a way. Every single par five, like 575 yards on Saturday, both of these guys were on the green in two, putting for eagle. Didn't see a single eagle all day. So we have very good greens. They were humbled. They really respected the course. But I was amazed to just watch these young guys work, and it's work. So between Saturday and Sunday, I figured I walked 10 miles, mostly down the center of the fairways, which is not a normal experience for me. I check it out on the left side and check it out more on the left side and check it out on the right side. But, you know, five bottles of water around, and it was all good. I lost 3 or 4 pounds, had a great time. I heartily recommend it for anybody.
You know what Mark Twain said. It's a good walk spoiled.
Yeah. I still enjoy it.
I love it. I have no time for it anymore. I mean, but you know, back in my salad days, when I'd graduated up from being a little pimply faced gospel DJ to an overnight adult contemporary pop DJ. I would get off work at 6 o'clock in the morning, drive immediately down to the local public course, hit two buckets of balls, walk 36 holes, and go home and go to bed. And that may have been one of the most delightful summers I ever had.
There's something about playing golf early in the morning. I don't know what it is, but it's so peaceful and quiet.
Well, yeah, and this was down by the river. The course doesn't even exist anymore, but it was a floodplain, and so all of the greens were elevated on mounds. 2,000 years from now, it will be mistaken for some sort of native complex. But and so they drained strangely, and you know you'd line up your putt and. The ball would kick up a rooster tail on the way to not going in the hole. But by the end of that summer, of 36 holes a day and a couple of buckets of balls, you know, I was probably down to a 19 handicap.
Yep.
That's a joke.
No, I understand exactly what you're saying, but when you play a course, you get used, for example, you get a whole idea of, okay, there's trouble in this spot over here and there's trouble over here. And when you stand on the tee, you sort of think about all of that. These guys don't think about that. and they go 125, 150 yards past all the trouble that you and I would take into consideration. Oh, dogleg left, tall pine trees. Let's go over them.
You know, my motto for years and years and years playing golf with buddies in high in college and high school was, you know, we were there having, and yeah, it's a dog leg. There's pine trees that are, you know, and down south the pine trees are a million miles high, and you know, and you look and you go, I'm gonna go over the pine trees, and they go, are you nuts? And I look at them and go, hey, I didn't come here to lay up.
What was that joke about the old guy playing with the young guy at the course? The young guy had played it for the first time, and the old guy had been playing there for years. And the young guy was a strong hitter. And the old guy was one of those guys that hits at 150 yards down the middle. And they got that dog leg left, and the kid said, well, I'm going to go right over the down the edge of these trees and set up for the green. And the old guy said, well, when I was your age, I went over those trees. And the young kid said, well, I can do that. And hauled away and drove it straight into the trees, out of bounds. You see where this is going?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, when I was a youngster, those trees were only about 20 feet high.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
when I was a youngster, it wasn't this. I didn't play this course, you know, Mister. That's not my dog, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, son, boy, does this dog bite? Not my dog.
In any event, I just wanted to call in and say how nice it is to listen without the hum.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad you enjoy that.
Yeah.
There are a couple of things that still bother me, but we'll get those sorted out in due time as well.
There were so many jokes went through my mind when you talked about getting rid of the Hummer. And I didn't post.
I didn't say Hummer, damn it. I said hum. You thought Hummer, you filthy-minded freak.
I didn't say a word, though.
Yep. No, I'm proud of you.
I kept it all to myself. In any event, it's remarkably quiet. And
pleasant.
I'm kind of mellowed out just talking to Dr. Bob. So,
absolutely.
I filed my paperwork with the Devil's Revenue Agency, and we'll wait a month or two and see whether they're going to extract a pound of blood. But between now and then, screw it. I'll just relax and have fun for the rest of whatever summer we get in Canada.
Well, see, that's the thing. I figured you've already had to take the snowblower out just to get the golf course ready.
No, I'm putting a call in to have the snowblower picked up, tuned up, and returned to me for the grand total of $99 from a motorcycle shop nearby.
$99 Canadian.
Absolutely. That's, what, $38 U.S. now?
Yeah, $12.50, something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I know...
You know this because I send you donations in Canadian dollars.
Yeah, just to hear me do the ciphering, yes. But I mention that because apparently a half a million Canadian dollars is only around 379,000 American U.S. American dollars, such as.
Yep.
How do I know this?
You're keeping right up with the times, aren't you, Bob?
Because there is a bounty on the Ashley Madison hackers.
Yep.
Since when do private entities? Or maybe it's forever. I guess anybody can put up a. It's not a bounty. It's a reward.
Yeah,
it's a reward for people to come forward and rat out the people who ratted out the people who were going to a website and paying money to deliberately, and one wonders how one negligently cheats on one's spouse, but you get the idea.
But, you know, there's pros and cons. It brought out Josh Duggar yet again. It's a cheap bounty. On the negative side, two guys in Toronto area have committed suicide.
Yeah.
Rather than face up to it. So I would probably up the bounty just to bring the little perps out into the daylight.
But in all reality, Ron, it does, and you know, a lot of people are enjoying their Schadenfreude over this, especially because it involves Josh Duggar.
Yeah,
and one of those people is apparently his brother-in-law, Anna, his wife. Josh's wife has a brother, and his name is Daniel Keller. And he's disgusted, and probably doubly disgusted because Anna has told friends that it was probably partially her fault because she wasn't doing enough to keep her man to home, which is just sickening. But Daniel Keller says he is not going to rest until he said, you have to confess and forsake your sin to have mercy, not sin and confess and repeat.
So sort of like,
I won't stop trying to get that pig out of our family.
Ooh. Boy, I bet Sunday dinners are a hoot in that house, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm guessing they go to Bob Evans, right?
Someplace where you can't get beer.
But in truth, what do you? And this extends beyond hacking Ashley Madison. I mean, this extends to, the things we talk about, like WikiLeaks and when Anonymous goes and finds out, for instance, that a whole bunch of Ferguson Police Department members are also in the Klan.
Or Anonymous finds out that Dick Cheney has had sex with goats and they have pictures. Should they post them?
Right, because, I mean...
It's a question.
You're going to burn in hell some more for putting that image in my mind. I don't know if even Evan Williams would wipe that out.
No, riding side saddle with a shotgun in one hand and a goat in the other. Yeah, that's Cheney. I can see that. But if you boil it all down, how is it any different from police departments posting names of Johns in the local paper?
I think you could do some hair splitting, Ron.
It would be hair splitting, but in principle, let's bring these people out into the public and shame them. It goes right back to the Puritan days and holier than thou. And I keep thinking,
hold on, because I'm gonna split one of those hairs.
We don't have to define the color first, right?
Josh Duggar being Josh Duggar, someone might have gone digging around to try to find more of his infidelities, not because of infidelities, but because hypocrisy. Okay, you with me? The average person cheating on their spouse, is not going to have a group like Anonymous or whatever these hacktivists were come after them for cheating on somebody. That was not. I don't think that was the point of this hack.
It's not newsworthy. No.
No. The point of this hack is that, and this is where we have to have a discussion about capitalism, really. The point with the Ashley Madison hack is that the Ashley Madison people are really the most among the most disgusting forms of capitalist predators. Now, whereas John and Jane, who are married to Susie and Ted, John and Jane meet at work and they've got some sort of simpatico, and they wind up meeting up at secret locations like the Dew Drop Inn, and they go to the Notel Motel, and it's all an Amazing Rhythm Aces song, and she says, "I've never been done anything like this before, have you?" And he says, "Only a time or two."
Club.
The Ballerina Swan Lake mobile home park and country club trailer court. Sure. But the thing is, that is an individual private thing. You know, I remember during the hunting of the cleanest, I don't know how many times I've said, you know, Jesus Christ, it's between him and Hillary. And none of my business. And I maintain that.
Yep.
But the fact it's the insertion, and that's probably the wrong word, of the capitalist impulse. It's the fact that Ashley Madison essentially is that they're
facilitating a
pimp.
Commercial.
The word you're looking for is pimp.
Yeah.
And it's their status as pimp. I mean, the porn industry is saying, you know, what in God's name has become of privacy? Yeah, I don't know that it's the same thing. Ashley Madison existed for the specific purpose of facilitating, I feel real icky on this because I feel like I'm on the wrong side of the issue, but the thing is, I think I will always come down, Ron, on the side of pointing out the predatory nature of capitalism, and this is that, even if it was being run by really, really polite Canadian capitalists.
And I would argue that it was the current interest traces back to as much voyeurism and wanting to put shame people as it does to high moral outrage and over a sense of indecency. But you got to give it to some of those Canadian guys. They figured out a way to exploit it.
Well, sure. I mean, and that is in the essence of capitalism. There's a market.
Yep.
There's a need. So instead of John and Jane finding each other in the First Baptist Church and herpetological sanctuary, John and Jane wind up hooking up from Halifax to Oregon.
Yep. Okay, we're running out of time, Bob.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are we?
Yes.
Well, thanks for taking thanks for taking my call.
Okay, sir. You have a great evening,
you too. And watch what you say about those fine people of the Canadian Tax Authority.
Absolutely. Yep. I'm going to go by and strew some rose petals in front of the door to their office tomorrow morning just to let them know how highly I think of them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And the day after.
Right, and make sure the rose petals are still attached to the thorns and they go to work barefoot.
Okay.
Ron, have a good evening.
You too. Take care, sir.
Bye now.
Bye.
Oh, what delightful conversations Ron and I have. So we're at the end of the program, a minute away from the end of the program. We will close the program down $152.37. You just knew those two zeros at the end of it all weren't going to last. Thank you, Carol. And thank you to Jack as well. $152.37. The fundraising goal tomorrow evening will be $352.37. And hopefully it won't get any worse than that. And maybe in the next week or 2 weeks, we'll finally wipe out the equipment fund. It sure would be awesomeness. Thanks to all of you for the time you spend in joining in and listening to this little conversation. Thank you very much. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.ORG. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.